about how Democrats are horrible, and they're back promoting hydroxychloroquine again. I don't understand.
Hi, this is Debbie Mayer in Hudson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 on your radio dial or streaming 24/7 at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai, a sculpture and architecture park and international residency center in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dusk until dawn. Art Omai presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Information at artomai.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Endless Garden in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to Forgotten Geek on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. This is Corey McCaslin, and this week, thanks to IRL, Sapping Time and Energy, we'll be skipping Geek Speak and doing some old-time radio and a kids read aloud with a little musical interlude. First up is an installment from Family Theater, created and hosted by Father Patrick Payton, which aired on the Mutual Network from 1947 to 1957 in first run and up to 1962 in repeats. This episode, originally aired on November 11, 1953, adapts the 1951 story The Martians and the Coys by Mac Reynolds, parodying Disney's The Martins and Coys, a segment of the 1946 anthology Make Mine Music, playing off the story of the feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys. We'll lead into that with a song by Rednecks that, like my favorite of theirs, The Chase, is far, far less annoying than Cotton Eye Joe, called Wish You Were Here.
Me, oh my countryman, wish you were here. Wish you were here. Don't you know the stove is getting colder? And I miss you like hell. And I'm feeling blue.
I miss everything.
I miss everything.
And I'm feeling blue. I wish you were here.
You ain't
here.
feel heaven in your eyes. And I wish you were here. I wish you were here.
The Kirkwood family, Jack, Lil, and Lee. From Hollywood, the Mutual Network, in cooperation with Family Theater, presents The Martians and the Coys, starring Jack, Lil, and Lee Kirkwood. Now to our transcribed drama, The Martians and the Coys, starring Jack Kirkwood as Pa Coy, Lil Kirkwood as Ma Coy, and Lee Kirkwood as Rhododendron.
Well, here on the home front, the specter of the flying saucers persists. From almost every part of the nation, reports continue of the visits by the mysterious objects. There is still no official explanation of the phenomenon. Scientists say the flying objects are not light reflections, and they are not men from Mars, as they insist there is no life as we know it on that planet. And so the story goes.
There is no life on Mars.
Quite amazing. Monitoring these Earth radio casts, isn't it, Dr. Zim?
Oh, quite. How little these Earth creatures know of the universe.
They have a lot to learn.
And so have we, Malco. That is why we are here, to increase our knowledge of these Earth creatures.
What are your plans, Dr. Zim? To continue cruising about the Earth observing?
No. The time has arrived for a different approach. In order to understand these Earthmen completely, we shall have to take a few specimens back home to Mars with us.
Ah, I see. Study them at leisure.
Yes, quite. We shall make a detailed scrutiny of them.
Oh. Have you selected the subject?
No. I've...
There's a likely-looking city below us there. Thousands to choose from.
No. I want no city dwellers. They are anemic, nervous, neurotic, and in far too much of a hurry to be good specimens. I've been watching a group of rather unique people. They are slow, methodical. An excellent study for us.
In what region are these people found, Doctor?
In the hill country.
You mean the ones they call... Hillbillies?
Hillbillies, yes. They are exactly what we need for our study, Malco.
But, Dr. Zim, how are we to take these people with us? They're obviously terrified of us already.
I propose to make them a friendly proposition.
But suppose they refuse to come?
Then we shall take them, willingly or not. Order the robot pilot to resume speed and come with me to the observation deck.
Ma, Shush that fly off in my nose, will you? Just crawling around there and making me twitch something awful.
Oh, shush it off yourself, you lazy good-for-nothing. I'm busy.
Oh, and you ought to do it. You're closer to it than I am. And if I do it, I'll disturb the hound dog, and he's sleeping so peaceful across my chest here.
Rhododendron, take the broom and swat that fly off on your father.
All right, Ma.
Doggone, now look what you gone and done. You know Rhody can't hit the broadside of a barn.
Well, maybe you should have had Grandpa hit the fly for you. His aim's perfect, ain't it, Grandpa?
Yep, he never misses. Somehow I don't trust him when he's shooting my way.
Well, come on and get up, Ho.
Oh, all right. I think I'll just take a little stroll up by the still, see how things is getting on.
You've been inspecting that still a mite too often to suit me.
Now, Ma, you know me and Luke is working on a new recipe. We got to watch it mighty close.
Why?
That batch of corn squeezings is a very delicate mixture we got this time. It'll either blow sky high or it'll be the most delicious batch. Dad, right, there she goes.
Hey, what's that? Sounds like hailstones are falling.
And more than likely it's the buttons off Luke's leather jumper. It fell in the mash yesterday.
Paw, quit your gabbing and fetch me some eggs from the chicken yard.
Oh.
And slap the hogs while you're down that way.
Oh, there's something for me to do. Slap the chicken, feed the hogs. Oh, hey, watch it, Charlie. Hey, Ma, come on out here. Look at this.
What is it now?
Here.
Oh, oh, boy, you're looking for another excuse to get out. Land sakes.
There. You see it, too?
Yeah. What is it?
I'm darned if I know. I just wanted to make sure I hadn't been dipping into me and Luke's recipe of my too generous life.
Oh, it's real, all right, but what in tarnation?
What is it, Ma? Well,
that's a good question, Rhody. I'm blamed if I know. Ever see the likes of that before, Grandpa?
Hey, it's coming from the direction of the holler. Maybe when the still exploded, it dug the darn thing.
Oh, that ain't nothing that was ever buried in the ground, Pa. It looks more like a... Well, I declare. It almost looks like one of them spaceships you hear about nowadays.
Spaceship? Space for what?
Look it. It's settling down in our back field there. Hey, you mind what you're doing out there? You're scaring the stuff half to death.
Now, careful, Ma. We don't get the first thing riled up at us.
I'll show her how to get riled up if I don't quit scaring my chickens. Come on, let's go down there and have a look at this thing.
Now, well, wait a minute, Ma. Let's not go rushing into things. Let's kind of wait a spell and see what it's going to do.
Wait nothing. Come on.
Hey, wait a minute. Look, here comes Luke. I guess he's seen it, too.
Oh, that worthless
Howdy,
lady.
Howdy, folks. I was just coming over to tell you, but I guess you've already seen it. Oh, howdy, Rhody.
Hello, Luke.
Howdy, Grandpa. What do you reckon that contraption is, anyway?
Well, we ain't never going to find out just standing here. Let's go down and see. Well, if it ain't the queerest looking thing that ever was, I'll put in with you. Looks like a big aluminum biscuit, only with windows.
It reminds me of Cy Fernie's new silo when it was new.
Oh, a silo ain't got windows, Luke.
No, looks more... It's kind of spooky looking, ain't it?
Hey, what's that?
Oh, it's a door.
Here.
And there's somebody inside that crazy machine, Hope. There he is.
Well, I'll be guarding.
What is it?
Queer looking critter, ain't he, Ms. Coy?
Quick, Pa, run up to the house and get the sassafras tea. The man's sick. Look, he's green.
No. Thank you, madam. I'm quite all right. You see, I'm always green in color.
Yeah? Must be something powerful wrong with your diet, son.
Oh, no. You don't understand. You see, I'm from Mars.
Well, I declare. You hear that, Ma? He's from Mars.
Well, land sakes alive. He may be a relative.
Yes. You know, me and Ma's got people in Hannibal and Centralia both.
Hannibal? Centralia?
Yeah. You said you was from Mars, Missouri, didn't you?
Oh, no, no, no.
No, no.
No, no. I'm from Mars. Mars.
Oh, Mars, Mars.
You know the planet.
Planet? What's that?
Oh, surely you know what a planet is. Why, the Earth is a planet. The universe is made up of myriads of planets, each spinning on its axis, each traveling in its own orbit, and making each day its own prescribed number of turns on the axis and about the sun.
Pa, you better go up and get that sassafras tea after all.
I think so.
No, no, I'm all right, I tell you. But, do come in. We'd love to have you inspect our ship.
Well, thank you. That's real neighborly. Let's go and have a look around, Ma.
Think we should, Grandpa? Oh, all right, then. Help me up, Luke.
Allow me, madam.
Well, thank you. Land sakes alive, son. Your hand is as cold as ice. You sure you ain't having a chill?
Oh, quite sure. You see, we on Mars are cold-blooded creatures.
I think he's kind of cute.
Oh, Rhody, hush your mouth.
Well, I do. I like little fat men.
Even green ones?
Oh, you.
Ah, whom have we here, Malco?
We have guests, Dr. Zim.
Here, I'm Hope Coy, and this here is my missus. Yonder's Luke, he's one of the neighbors. And this one here with the hair growing down her back. Too bad it didn't go on her head. That's my daughter, Rhododendron.
Rhododendron?
Yeah.
Oh, what a pretty name. That's a flower, isn't it?
Yeah. We'd run out of people names by the time she was born. And, oh, yes, and that's Grandpa there.
Not in here, Grandpa.
Well, welcome. I'm Dr. Zim, in charge of our little expedition. This is my assistant, Malcolm.
What brings you to these parts, Mr. Zim?
We have been cruising about your country for some time now, looking you over, as it were. I hope we haven't frightened you.
Oh, land sakes, no.
We are just a bit different in appearance.
Shucks, you ought to see some of our relatives in Centralia.
Pardon?
Oh, don't pay no attention to him, Mr. Zim. Say, this is quite a machine you fellas ride around in.
It sure is. Can we look around?
Oh, by all means, by all means. Perhaps you'd care for a little ride.
But
you'll never know you're off the ground. Close the door, Malco. Our mission is almost complete.
Come on, Ma, let's give it a try. Might be kind of fun.
I'm ready.
Well, I would like to have the rest of the young'uns along.
There are more in your family, Mrs. Coy.
Oh, yeah. Why, of course, most of them is married and out on their own by this time. There's just 9 left at home now.
Yeah, Rhody here, she's an old maid. Going on 12 and still not married.
Nine more, eh? Well, the more we have on our little excursion, the better, eh, Malco?
Well, I don't reckon they'll be back much before supper time, Mr. Zim.
Then why don't you bring them all down after supper, Mr. Coy?
Oh, I've got a better idea. Why don't you two fellas come on and have supper with us?
That's a good idea, Ma. I got a possum and some sow belly out in the smokehouse. I'll go get her.
Yep, and I'll fix up some nice dandelion greens.
Oh, nothing green, please. Chlorophyll disagrees with us.
That's so, or what do you fellas eat?
Well, our food on Mars is all refined and concentrated.
Yes, in fact, most of our meals are taken in capsule form.
Capsules? What's that? You mean like pills?
Well, yes.
Goodness, no wonder you're a funny color. Just thinking about taking pills 3 times a day is enough to turn me green.
Please don't go to any trouble for us, Mrs. Coy.
Oh, it won't be no bother. When the family gets home, we'll all have a nice, quiet meal together. Right, Grandpa?
More frog legs.
Don't mind if I do, Luke.
No, I mean about how about me having some more?
You're making an awful hog of yourself, but go ahead.
Mr. Zim, why don't you and your friend have something else?
Pardon?
I said, why don't you and your friend have something else?
No, thank you. We've had quite enough.
Ma?
Yeah?
You through talking?
Yeah, why?
They all have healthy appetites, don't they?
Oh, they sure do, bless their hearts. They always did eat hearty.
This is the only family I've ever seen that could get sparks out of their knives and forks when they eat. Makes mealtime near unbearable in the summer.
Well, everybody ready for a dessert?
We got a sweet for dessert, Ma.
Yep, I baked a nice gooseberry pie, especially for tonight. Now, pass me your dishes. Come on, children.
How come you're so funny looking, mister?
Maybe Ma's cooking made him sick.
He was green before he ate.
Yeah, but he's greener now.
Hey, that's right. You sick, mister?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do feel just a bit ill at the moment. I'm afraid we'll have to postpone our trip until tomorrow.
Oh,
shucks, I'll never get to have any fun.
Oh, now you two just keep quiet. Can't you see Mr. Zim ain't feeling to chipper? We'll go tomorrow.
Oh, yes, thank you, madam. Malco, let's get back to the ship and... Malco? Malco, what is he?
He's under the table.
What?
What happened to him?
He said he was thirsty, so I gave him a drink.
A drink of what?
I don't know. It was here in this jug.
Two gray jumping horn toads. That's a sample Luke and me took out of the still yesterday.
What's a still?
But then, don't you know?
No.
Well, sir, a still, just about the handiest invention us mountain folks ever thought of.
Oh, don't you listen to him, Mr. Zim. Them stills is a bunch of nonsense that bring nothing but trouble.
Yes, but I don't understand. What was it that Malco drank?
Well, you regulate that explosion this morning just by the time you came in.
Why, yes, it nearly blew us off our course.
Well, sir, your friend just took himself a swig of that liquid dynamite.
Great Jupiter! Yep. I must get him back to the ship at once. Help me get him over my shoulders.
There you go.
Look at Ma, the guy's turned pink now.
Gee, he's pretty, ain't he?
Reminds me of that chameleon we used to have.
Aw, he's better. The chameleon couldn't turn pink.
Pink? Oh, this is terrible. I hope I'm not too late. Good night. We'll see you in the morning and settle accounts then.
Settle accounts? You don't reckon he's mad, do you, Ma? After all, the critter took a sip out of the jug of his own free will. I didn't even charge him for it.
Oh, no, Mr. Zim is just upset. I'll take them down some nice cornmeal mush in the morning.
Mm.
That'll make them feel good. And then we'll all get that ride in their rocket ship or whatever it is. Pa, land sakes, where you been all morning? I ain't seen hide nor hair of you.
Oh, I've been busy, Ma. Busier than a short-tailed cow in fly time. You know, always something to do around the place, you know. Always something to be done.
Sure, I know it, but I didn't think you did.
Well, you remember that busted rain spout on the porch? You used to squirt the water right through the kitchen door every time it rained?
Yep.
Well, it's fixed.
Pa, you don't mean it.
Yep.
Well, good for you.
Yes, sir. Good for me.
But I thought you said the reason you ain't fixed it is because you never could find a funny-shaped pipe like that.
Was. But when I was kind of digging around and I found one.
Well, I'll say it again. Good for you, Pa.
Good for me.
You seen the kids this morning?
No, good for me.
I heard you, Pa. Well, they all shot out of here after breakfast, and I ain't heard from them since.
Well, they was down looking at that rocket ship last time I saw them. They all said for me to tell you to hurry on down so we get that ride those fellas promised us.
Oh, mercy sakes, I near forgot. Well, I'll just hang up my apron, Pa. Let's go. Grandpa! Grandpa!
Oh, he ain't here, Ma. He was out of the house even before the kids was.
Oh, dear. Just imagine, Grandpa ain't been out of the house this time of morning since I can't remember when. What you doing down there?
Well, the last I saw of him, he was teaching one of them green fellers how to chaw.
How to chaw?
Yep.
Oh, they'll be sick again, sure as the world.
I ain't so sure. One seemed to take to it all right.
Well, I... Good land. Look at those young'uns swarming
Would
over
you
that machine.
Would you stop sliding off and bumping his feet? I'm going. I'll hit you in the head. Oh, he stopped. Look at him, Ma. This is Ma falling
sliding off a haystack, even.
Now, you be careful, Elmo.
Well, I'm all right. Look, Ma, I got something for you.
Oh, that's nice. What is it?
Thought you might use it for a cookie cutter.
Well, that would be a good idea, that. Where'd you get it?
I found it laying around rocket ship.
Oh, but Elmo, you shouldn't be taking
it. It wasn't attached to nothing. At least, not very well.
Oh, Mrs. Coy, I see you finally arrived.
Oh, yeah. I hope you and your friend are feeling better today, Mr. Zim.
Oh, yes, yes, we're fine. Well, shall we go? Malco, let's get all aboard.
Yes, sir. Come on, everyone. Climb in. You first, Mrs. Coy.
Oh, thank you. Come along, children.
Hey, wait for me. Wait.
Oh, howdy, Rhodey.
Oh.
You needn't be so uppity. I think you got a case on that green thingamawut.
He ain't no thingamawut. He's got a heap more manners than you ever had.
Oh.
Oh, quit your squabbling, you two. Get in, Luke. Grandpa, are you here? Now, remember what I told you yesterday. You should have thought of that outside.
We're all here, then. Good. Shut the door, Malco.
Yes, sir.
Better lock the door, Malco.
Lock it?
Merely a safety precaution, madam. Success. My name will go down in Martian history for this. Now we're ready. Next stop. Start the motors, Malco. Start the motors.
Yes, sir. Operation gate set for 300 million. Firepower self-regulator advanced. Contact. All ready for you to start the dynamatric hydroactivator, sir.
Here we go. What's the matter? Start the motors.
I'm trying to, sir, but there seems to be something wrong.
Nonsense. There's no such thing as mechanical failure in a Martian space machine. Start them again.
Yes, sir. It's no use, sir.
You idiot. You don't have to be a mechanic. Adjust the robot to 00 and let it check the trouble.
Yes, sir. I'll have them. Where's the robot?
Where is it? Where do you suppose it is? What's gotten into you, Malco? Now, look here, I... All right, you've had your little joke. Now, where is the robot?
But I haven't seen it, sir.
What?
No, sir. It was here when you got up this morning. Don't you remember? You...
Oh.
There's something the matter, Mr. Zim?
It's the robot pilot. It's fantastic, but it's disappeared.
What's a robot?
It's sort of a mechanical man.
Yes, it's a highly sensitive machine able to calculate all the necessary instruments to run one of our ships.
Pa, I seen it.
Hush up, Elmo.
You seen what, Elmo?
Pa, take a stick to me if I tell.
Hope Coy, what have you been up to?
Oh, well, you gotta admit we needed a new scarecrow. I tell you, them birds will eat you out of the house and home.
Oh, you mean you took that robot out to the cornfield?
What's this?
Well, I just thought I'd borrow it for a few days, see how it would do.
Oh, I'm ashamed of you. Well, that thing's liable to scare all the birds away, and the bugs will just take the peach crop.
Sir, the electromagnetizer is gone, too.
Very well. Who took that? Well, does anyone else have a contribution?
Ma.
Yeah?
Reckon you better give him back the cookie cutter.
Anyone else? Mr. Coy.
Oh, you needn't look at me so suspicious-like. I wouldn't take it. All right, I'll get it off in the rain spout. The almanac said we weren't going to have much rain this year anyhow.
Yeah, it's a lucky thing for us that I have some knowledge of the working of these ships. We'll soon be ready to take off.
Oh, that's fine, sir.
A great lot of help you've been to me, Malco.
Sorry, sir.
3 weeks it's taken me to put this thing back together, and all you've done is turn around. You might at least keep those people away from the ship until such time... What are they doing there, anyway?
They're puddling with one of the empty fuel tanks, mixing some kind of liquid in it. There's nothing they can harm, sir.
There, that does it. Now, let's get the people inside once more so we can get home.
Sir,
There's Mrs. Coy. She seems to have more authority than anyone. I'll ask her to help. Well, Mrs. Coy, we're all set once again. Shall we gather your clan and take that nice ride I promised you?
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to call off the ride for now, Mr. Zim.
Call it off?
Well, you know how kids are once the novelty wore off.
Yes, but if you spoke to them, did they...
Oh, they've all gone down to the creek to look for crawdads, and I'm canning tomatoes, so I guess we'd better just forget the whole thing. Thanks a heap for the invitation, though.
Very well. Maybe next time.
Sure thing, Mr. Zim. Next time, I'll have some nice plum butter for you to take back with you, too.
What's the use? Well, come on, Malco.
Sir, I'd rather not go with you.
Oh, that's quite all right. You'd what?
That's right, sir. You see, Rhododendron and I, We've made plans, sir. You see, she's found me a job here, modeling for something called Halloween masks. And
Are you out of your mind? Well, you could never get along here on Earth.
Oh, I don't know. I'm catching on to things pretty fast, sir.
Well, don't think I'm going back without you. I'll not be made a complete fool. Now get in.
Oh, but sir,
get in here with me.
Well, no,
get in,
I say. Your eyes, folks. She's going to blow up. It'll put too much yeast in her. Head for the ditch.
What the...
Hang on to your ship, Mr. Jim. She's going to blow to the moon.
And now a special report. Just when we thought the flying saucers were about over, up comes this story off the wires tonight. A strange, unidentified object has been sighted cruising about the moon. Traveling in spurts, almost as if it had the hiccups, the object bounced off Jupiter, raced through the Big Dipper, and is now merrily chasing itself around and around the moon. What next? Hollywood Family Theater has brought you The Martians and the Coys, starring Jack, Lil, and Lee Kirkwood. Others in our cast were Jay Novello, Paul Frees, Howard Culver, Beverly Washburn, and Peter Votrian. The script was written by William Lutz, with music composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman, and was directed and transcribed for Family Theater by Lou X. Lansworth.
Welcome back to Forgotten Geek on WGXC. You just heard the 1953 sci-fi comedy radio play The Martians and the Coys, led into by a remix of Redneck's Wish You Were Here. Now for our second half is a Kid Stuff read-aloud record that you wouldn't expect them to make, but hey, it was 1984, and there was a sequel, so why not do a read-along for 2001 A Space Odyssey? But leading into that will be Gil Scott Heron's Whitey on the Moon.
We have a poem here. It's called Whitey on the Moon. And it was inspired by some whiteys on the moon. So I want to give credit where credit is due. All right. That's it.
A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the Moon. Her face and arms began to swell and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night because Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me because Whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special. To Whitey on the Moon.
This is your 2001 read-along book. Every time you hear this chime, it means it's time to turn the page in your storybook. Now, if you're ready, we will start the story, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Don't forget to turn the page every time you hear the chime. The age of the great dinosaurs had long passed. A terrible drought had dried out the earth for millions of years. Now, only those creatures who were strong and fast would survive. The man-apes were neither strong nor fast. They had always been plant-eaters, but now all the plants were dying in the blazing sun. There was plenty of food around them in the form of other animals, but the man-apes had never thought of eating meat. If they didn't, soon they too would perish. One day, the man-apes happened upon a strange sight. It was a new rock, a shiny black slab unlike any rock the man-apes had ever seen before. The whole tribe screamed with excitement. As they overcame their fear and reached out to touch the rectangular black stone, a new idea was born. Moonwatcher, the largest of the man-apes, picked up a strong bone and clutched it in his hairy hand. Something told him, was it the black stone, that he had found a tool, a weapon. Now he could hunt and live and evolve. It would take millions of years, but someday Moonwatcher's descendants, 100,000 generations from now, would evolve into man. Moonwatcher cried out in joy and wonder and tossed the bone high into the blue sky. Like the bone, the spaceship was also a tool. 3 million years had passed. Many things had changed, but some things had remained unchanged, like man's need for new discoveries. This is why Dr. Heywood Floyd, the world-famous astronomer, was a passenger, the only passenger, on the Orion 3 as it raced towards Space Station 5. From there, he would continue on to the moon, where a top-secret discovery had been made, one which the government hoped he could explain. As he gazed out the window at the blue Earth far below, Dr. Floyd wondered how his colleagues and friends would take the news once it was made public. Would they be shocked or relieved to learn that the first sign of intelligent life elsewhere in the universe had been discovered 30 feet beneath the surface of the moon? That sign was a black monolith, exactly like the stone slab that had saved the man-apes from extinction millions of years earlier. What new message did this monolith bring to man? Under the bright gleam of the excavation's floodlights, the mysterious black slab seemed to glow. Dr. Floyd and a fellow scientist made their way down the steps cut into the rocky pit on the moon toward the monolith. Dr. Floyd's voice rang through the radio transmitter to the other scientist.
What did your geology tests show? Was the monolith deliberately buried?
Yes, it was. There is a definite difference between the rock that the slab sits in and the fill we cleared from out around it.
Any clue as to what that monolith is?
A tool, a shrine, a survey marker, a spare part, take your choice. All we really know is that it's sending signals out into space toward Jupiter. So that must mean there's intelligent life beyond Earth.
the spaceship Discovery sped along through deep space toward Jupiter at incredible speed. 14 months had passed since the discovery of the monolith on the moon, and many lunar months had passed since the beginning of the spaceship's 2-year mission. On board Discovery, crew members Dave Bowman and Frank Poole were the only 2 humans awake. The other 3 were in hibernation, a state of deep sleep in which their heartbeats and breath rates are greatly slowed down. This conserves their energy and the spaceship supplies during the long journey. Their life support systems were controlled by HAL 9000, the ship's computer. HAL could think and talk, and perhaps even have feelings. It was HAL's job not only to run the ship, but to reawaken the crew when the Discovery reached its destination. Bowman and Poole did not know that their mission had anything to do with a strange monolith found on the moon, nor did they know that they were heading for Jupiter. The only ones who knew the full truth were the sleeping crew members and HAL. The crew members would not be awakened by the computer until almost the end of the trip, and HAL had been programmed not to reveal anything. It was Dave Bowman who came into focus in HAL's mechanical eye as he spoke to the computer.
HAL, Frank and I believe there is something about this mission that we weren't told. Something that you and the rest of the crew members were told. Is this true?
HAL replied in his calm, quiet voice.
I'm sorry, Dave, but I don't think I can answer that question without knowing everything that both of you know.
As usual, HAL was logically correct, but he was also stalling. Dave and Frank settled down to the peaceful monotony of the voyage, and the next 3 months passed without incident. On Frank's birthday, after sharing a television visit with his family back on Earth, Dave was called away from the screen by a message from HAL.
Sorry to interrupt Frank's party, Dave, but I think we have a problem.
What is it, HAL?
My troubleshooter circuits show an impending failure in the antenna alignment unit.
Strange that the AA unit should fail so quickly.
Dave commented to Frank when they were alone.
Without its radio beam, we'll have no contact with mission control on Earth.
But the problem was not in the antenna. It was worse. Much worse. After Dave left the ship in the smaller space pod and changed 2 AA units in 4 days, only to find nothing wrong with them, Dave and Frank began to realize that the problem was not with the AA unit, but with HAL. A few days later, Dave and Frank were startled by the yellow warning light signaling that the AA unit had failed again. This time, Frank offered to go out and check it. After suiting up, Frank entered the pod bay where the pods were docked. Leaving the Discovery in one pod, Frank guided the small craft toward the AA unit. When the pod's mechanical arms could not remove the AA unit from its housing, Frank decided to leave the pod and do the job by hand. He floated through space until his magnetic boots attached firmly to the top side of the Discovery. Suddenly, the pod's jets, silent during Frank's spacewalk, roared to life. Frank looked up to see his small spacecraft rushing towards him out of control. Dave watched helplessly from the Discovery's observation deck as death came quickly to his friend. A tragic accident. Or was it? Sitting alone in the crew quarters of the ship, Dave stared silently at the bunk that had belonged to his friend. HAL watched through his never-blinking eye, then spoke.
Too bad about Frank, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I suppose you're pretty broken up about it.
Yes, I am.
He was an excellent crew member, but his death won't affect the mission.
At that moment, Dave made a decision.
Hal, I want you to waken the others.
I can't do that, Dave.
Then I'll have to disengage you, Hal, and wake them myself.
Don't do that, Dave.
Hal was stalling for time, planning and thinking all the while. Dave headed for the hibernation room. But as he passed the inner doors to the pod bay, a sudden blast shook the ship and the bay's doors burst open. The air rushed in with a roar and Dave felt himself being sucked out into space. He narrowly escaped death by clinging to a handrail and making his way to an emergency life support system. Continuing on to the hibernation room, Dave went first to the gauges controlling the crew's life support system. There, he made a shocking discovery. Every man in the crew was dead. Hal spoke in his usual calm voice.
Something seems to have happened to the life support systems, Dave.
Dave didn't answer.
There's been a failure in the pod bay doors, Dave. Lucky you weren't killed.
Still, Dave remained silent as he turned and headed for the computer control room. Dave acted quickly before Hal could strike again. One by one, he disconnected Hal's memory chips until the giant computer began losing its mind.
Dave, stop. I'm afraid. I'm becoming a child. I am a HAL 9000 computer. I became operational on January 12, 1992. My instructor was Dr. Chandra. He taught me a song. If you'd like to hear it, I'll sing it for you. Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer true. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage, but you'll look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two.
As soon as Hal was disengaged, a special video automatically burst onto the television screen. It was a pre-recorded message from Dr. Haywood Floyd explaining the true purpose of the Discovery mission.
The black monolith uncovered on the moon is beaming messages toward the planet Jupiter. We believe there must be some sort of intelligent life there. But life in what form? That is your mission, gentlemen.
From that moment on, events blurred in Dave Bowman's memory. It all seemed a lifetime ago. Was it days or years until he reached Jupiter? The brilliant colored lights, the unearthly landscape. Was he moving faster than time, faster than the speed of light? As he entered an orbit around Jupiter, Dave encountered a huge black monolith, hundreds of times larger than the one on the moon. He left the Discovery in one of the space pods to investigate it, radioing this last baffling message to Mission Control.
My God!
My God! My God!
It's full of stars!
Full of stars! Stars! Stars!
The monolith seemed to lead the way to a landing in a white room, and suddenly both the monolith and the pod were gone. Dave looked around and saw an old man who lay dying in a bed. It was himself. Then that old man was gone, and there was a new life beginning. Dave Bowman was gone now. The newborn child The star child that Dave Bowman had been transformed into blinked its eyes and looked around at the universe. What a wonderful place to play.
Set began with Gil Scott Heron's Whitey on the Moon, then the Kid Stuff Read Aloud record of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and ended with the 80s Clat remix of Linkin Park's Burn It Down. Thanks for listening to Forgotten Geek. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a regular show, and tune in next week, August 6th, Thursday at 7 p.m. for Thangularity, where I do science history. We'll be going out with a Bowie song, but not the one you're probably expecting. Here's the 12-inch mix of Hollow Space Boy.
I wanna be free. spice for it.